presents First Impressions.
There's a new album out.
Have you listened to it yet?
I'm digging the new album.
I'll check it out.
What do you think of the new album?
First Impressions.
Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of First Impressions on the Scratch the Track podcast presented by the Dune Grim Show. I am the Dune.
And I am Grim, and today we are going to give our first initial impression of Butterfly 3000 by none other than King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Wow, man. Dude, they're just spitting out another album. 18th studio album, second this year. Third in like 9 months. It's just crazy, dude.
18
studio album. Yeah. I think in like 10 years.
Wow.
That's
almost that 2 years.
Probably the most. And it's not like they're just like, you know, putting out ones that are like, hey,
just
you know,
to, yeah, it's not demos.
To and... do it. No, that's not including their live albums or anything like that. This is like 18th studio album.
Now, you know, one of the only things that I think that they haven't done yet, because when you think about what they've done with their music, there's rock, there's blues, there's psychedelic trips, there's metal,
microtonal.
I think they need to do a cover album at some point, just because they haven't done it. And I think I know which album it needs to be and what the title is.
Wait, you're talking about covering
an entire album
of somebody else, not just like an album of covers, but covering an album.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cause I don't know who's done that. Well, I guess the Lips have done it, but
yeah,
dude,
get ready world.
King Gizzard and the Pinball Wizard. And they cover the Who's Tommy.
Wow, dude, that would be pretty sweet. I would listen to that.
I would too.
Although, you know, seeing that we talked about that one, actually, no, we recorded that one recently. We'll be talking about it very soon for all you fans out there. And while we're at it, why don't we just get everyone to go ahead and give us a good
like, subscribe, and comment below.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much, everyone. We got a lot of King Gizzard fans here, so hopefully people are looking forward to this one and expecting our reaction at this point, because they come out with albums in the perfect amount of time where I feel like we don't have to talk about them for a bit. And then all of a sudden it's like, it's time to talk about them again.
I know.
And so everyone who's watching, we probably have an episode that you're going to like on Wednesday. And it was one that was highly recommended by a lot of people, because we did Polygon Dwanaland, last fall, I believe.
Yeah.
We talked about, which probably coincided with the KG release.
Yeah.
And then,
or LW.
And then when LW came out, we did a episode on our first initial impressions of that. So
correct. Yeah.
Feel free to check those ones out. But so dude, this one I've listened to, I would say probably about 5 or 6 times, and it's very different than KG and LW. Those are definitely in the microtonal.
Yeah. And like, this is in the traditional, 12, step equal temperament scale that is Western music.
Exactly.
Not 12 step. That's a program, 12 tone equal temperament 12 scale. Tone.
Okay.
So
I'm sure it's a hell of a program. Yeah. But
the first step is right admitting you have a problem.
It is. That's what they tell me anyways, and I've yet to get to that first step. So you know, I gotta say, when I first heard this, I hadn't done any reviews. They hadn't released any singles. Now, in previous albums and what we've seen from a lot of artists,
that's the thing now.
Coming out is like, it's like almost like half the album.
Yeah, it's released. Not just a teaser. I mean, it's it's a collection of tracks. So yeah, I thought exactly. And you had mentioned that earlier, and I thought that was pretty cool that they didn't, because it definitely like for me it piqued my interest a little more. Not that I wasn't already interested and didn't want to listen to whatever they were going to come out with, but still.
Well, that's the thing with it, is anytime a band releases sort of singles and stuff like that leading up to the album, it kind of gives you an idea of, hey, maybe this is what this album is going to sound like. This is where they're going. And then, you know, again, if half the album is released, you have a very good idea.
Yeah.
This one, it's 10 tracks, and you really had no idea. And I think I know we did, and a lot of fans were kind of wondering where they were going to go after KG and LW. And I, you know, this is a very different one.
Oh yeah. I would say it sounds unlike any other one.
And I think most recently I've been listening to a lot of KG, LW. You know, we did our episode on Polygon Dwanaland, and then also with, maybe on Wednesday, who's to say, if we were to discuss Nonagon Infinity, maybe that would be something you were interested in.
Perhaps.
But those are the ones I've been listening to a lot. And this one is very different from those. I feel like those ones are, you know, they're these deep trips, right? Where you just get so deep into them. And I feel like with this album, they kind of took their foot off the gas pedal a little bit.
Yeah.
And instead with this one, I felt like, you know, I can enjoy the ride a little more and enjoy the scenery instead of, oh my God, I got to take it all in. And you're almost like, it's the other ones are so in your face, where I feel like this one wasn't in your face. And I love the in your face, but I also kind of like this too.
Yeah. This is interesting, because not so much with Giz, but I think with a lot of albums, I feel like there'll be something that would really draw one in or really turn somebody off. And with this, I can't say that I mean, I was drawn into it because it was interesting, but the pull wasn't as strong, and there definitely wasn't anything where I heard it and I said immediately, I don't like this. You know, it's one of those albums that even if it's not your favorite one, you could just put it on.
That's kind of what I was thinking, because that's kind of what I did today. First, I sat down and I listened to it, and then I was just doing stuff around the house. And I was like, man, this is just an album you can sort of have on a little bit. And it doesn't, as with their other albums, I feel like their other albums kind of command your attention.
Yes.
I don't feel this one has this. I feel like this one is actually kind of the perfect fun summer psychedelic pop album. Like it's just, I can totally, you know, driving through the mountains or going on a long drive somewhere, man, you just put this on and you know, you can just kind of forget about it.
Yeah.
You're good. And not everything has to be this deep intellectual journey,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Where
it's not so heavy.
Yeah. It's not so heavy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the main kind of takeaway and thing that I really liked about this album. Our buddy Forrest sent a really good article, and I don't have everything in front of me, but I thought it was cool how it was an interview basically with Stu McKenzie, and he kind of goes through and talks about each track on the album and is sort of interviewed about them. So I'm looking forward to kind of finishing that article. And I'm sure there's a lot of good information for when we do a full scratch of this album.
Yeah.
But you know, it sounds like there's some good info out there, but you know, even other than that, you couldn't really find much. They didn't give a lot of teasers with, you know, any singles. I don't think there's any music videos that have been released yet. Maybe one was released today or yesterday to coincide with the release of the album, but I'm not sure about that.
Well, and there was, I remember hearing that quote that Stu McKenzie said it was his favorite Gizzard album. So I think that would also kind of prompt some additional anticipation. And the other thing is, I guess a lot of their other albums had leaked.
Right.
Prior to release, and this one did not. It's watertight, dude.
Well, so I do have a couple of screenshots from that sort of interview, and the interviewer, I guess it's on stereogum.com. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anybody out there, check that out. But a big influence of this album was he is a new father.
And I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that had a lot of influence into it. And McKenzie said, you know, there's a huge influence of that going through the record. And maybe part of the reason is it's such a positive record.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good way to describe it.
Put him in such a positive mindset. And that's what, yeah, that is kind of for the most part, most of the songs do have sort of a positive attitude. And
yeah,
and that's why I consider it, yeah, this light sort of summer album.
So. Well, one thing that I wanted to mention, that They've definitely used the synthesizer fairly consistently, and I don't maybe heavily is a little strong, but it's usually there in some form in a lot of the records.
Yeah.
But in this one, they apparently used a modular synthesizer, which makes sense, based on all these kind of like loops you hear. And the loops right. are slightly different, but they're also very similar. It said most of them are in a major key, and just listening to like the note choices and even like the key tonal center that a lot of these are in, there is a lot of similarity and there's a lot of consistency with that throughout the album, despite the fact that, you know, they are each different songs.
Right. Right. Well, one thing that I saw, I don't know if any songs stood out to you.
Yeah.
One that really stood out to me, and it was funny because this is almost about as far as I got in the article before we had to do this. The song Shanghai.
Yeah.
It's the second track. Uh-huh. I really like it. It does have a little taste of a little Eastern feel to it.
Is that an Eastern thing?
But it is definitely an Eastern thing, dude. But one thing, I don't have the question, but one thing Mackenzie said, and it's a great little story. And man, if I ever go to Shanghai, I think we need to check this out.
I've been there. I can't wait. Maybe I've been to where he's talking about.
Maybe you've done this. Okay. So he says, you know, we had this one day night in Shanghai where we got the classic Shuzhen hot pot and got really drunk. Szechuan and hot pot and got really drunk and all went insane, basically. He was like, it was a bizarre experience and makes sense to anyone who was there. I don't know what that is. And maybe other people out there know what that is. Is that some sort of special drink? Like, is it like,
oh, you
know, cause here we have like party drinks where we all like drink out of the same straw and
I don't know if that's a special drink. I thought it was a kind of food where it's like, there's a hot pot and you'll like dip something in there and it kind of, I think, but I could be very wrong on that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, does that get you hammered? Cause
well, no, I mean, you just like drink kind of aside that from that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that was it, but yeah, it sounded like it was sort of a drink.
Oh, maybe so, it was. I could be completely wrong.
Sounds like a good time. So whenever we do our episode from Shanghai, we're going to make sure we partake in that. That'll be a really good episode.
Dude, and you got to go to the to like the one needle with the ball on it, and you stand on this glass floor and just look down. It's pretty trippy.
Wow. I hear the ping pong shows in Bangkok are pretty great too.
Ping pong? Oh, I've never been there.
Yeah, never mind. anyways, moving on. So yeah, with this album, I didn't know what to expect, and that's a kind of cool thing going into an album like this.
Yeah, I agree.
So this is their second this year. I think maybe they're gonna have a third one. I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
Wow. I don't know how you do that. And quite honestly, with the amount of material they have, I don't know how you remember all the damn songs.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
we talked about, or will be talking about on Wednesday with maybe some other live shows. Like, it, you know, if you go to see them live, it's like, at this point, they have so many albums. It's like, if you have a favorite song, there's a good chance you're not going to hear it. Because,
oh, yeah.
Like, are they going to play the most recent album? Because they have, like, three most recent albums at this point since they've done their last tour.
Yeah.
And I think the San Francisco show that they came out with last year, that did have a fair amount, I believe, from Nonagon Infinity.
Oh, okay.
But that's also from 2016. So it's like, you know, on this tour, man, what are they going to play? KG, LW? They're going to play songs from this? Or, yeah. You know, some old ones that people like? So
I really think with that in mind and with how prolific they are with their writing and what they come out with, I really think that although they're kind of, maybe at least in the U.S., it's more of like a niche thing, if you will. Because there are some people where I'll say the name of the band to, and they have no idea what I'm talking about. And I'm just kind of like, where is the rock you just crawled out from under? But anyways, I think with a band this prolific and the fact that they're not putting out bad music. I mean, even if some of it in some of the albums is not your taste, I mean, you'd listen to it and be like, that's well done. I mean, even if it's not your thing, I think they're going to go down as one of the most important bands. History will eventually catch up and paint them as one of the most important bands of this era. I do not doubt that.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely a standout for sure. I mean, again, a lot of the material, being able to put out this much material in this of this high a quality is, yeah. I don't know. Some bands take like 3 or 4 years in between putting out albums. What, Radiohead hasn't put out an album since what, 2016? I think we discussed the other day. Like,
well, think about one of the longest crazy. Running bands out there, the Rolling Stones.
The Rolling Stones, yeah.
And look at the amount of studio albums that they have. No, I haven't counted it. But we're talking like, what, by now, like 50 plus years, 60 years that they've been a band. And yep. I would be willing to bet that King Giz has put out as many albums or maybe even more studio albums, not counting live, that the Stones have.
That's a good point. I mean, the Stones did have earlier in their career, a pretty solid run. Lately, they've kind of tailed off, as you would expect.
Well, but yeah, yes. But their next album is going to be like From the Nursing. I mean, they're getting old, and not that's not a slight. It's just reality.
Yeah, and people, I mean, I probably won't buy it, but
yeah, funny. Somebody will.
Somebody will. Yeah, the real fans. Well, is there anything, was there any songs that stood out to you? Any favorites, anything in particular that stood out to you?
Yes.
In this album? Yes. I would like to hear it.
Well, I like that everything is very kind of major key sounding and dreamy. And then once you get to Blue Morpho, you get the loop changes a little bit and it gets little darker.
I noticed that it's definitely darker. It's still dreamy, but it's a dark dream.
And then then Interior People has this whole other section that it goes into that I think is really cool. Like that kind of like
starts off with that piano.
Uh huh.
You know, I thought it sounded like a tack piano or something. What is that?
I believe that a tack piano would be a. See, maybe it is. I honest to God thought it was a hammered dulcimer, which is like a stringed instrument that you just play with these hammers.
Okay.
That's what it sounded like, but that's not listed in the credits. Now, one thing that is that he plays Wurlitzer, which I'm assuming is the Wurlitzer electric piano, although they did make a lot of organs as well. But that's when you say a Wurlitzer, you're kind of talking about the electric piano. Totally. And right. I guess I wasn't really listening for it because I feel like this album is just different than maybe I was expecting going into it. So I wasn't listening for it, but I guess I didn't notice it.
Neither did I. Now that you bring it up, I did not notice that at all. So it's something to listen for. And if anybody knows, comment below on what track we should check out to hear that. But yeah, it didn't stand out. On the first few initial listens.
Yeah.
Definitely did not.
Ambrose Kenny Smith is credited with a saxophone too in track 4, which I guess that didn't jump out at me either.
Yeah.
But I would love to, for friend of the show and producer Forrest, I would love to see what the modular rig looks like because he is a modular artist, goes under the name Kerblamski. Check it out. But after seeing his rig, which is impressive, you know, in and of its own right.
It could be taken so many different ways, but yes.
Take it however the fuck you want to take it. But I would love to see their modular rig that they were using to do a lot of this stuff because it would be interesting. I think I love that kind of shit though. I want to see, it bums me out sometimes when we do not only first impressions, but scratches because I'm thinking, man, this was like a major band in the studio doing a major album. why aren't there more pictures of the recording process? Like, I would want pictures of that because it's you're in a cool space. You got all this badass gear. Like,
and dude,
take more pictures.
We all got cameras. The right.
Oh,
here.
I know. Hey, just do it. I know.
Yeah.
There were actually. Sorry.
I was gonna say that's what I love about sort of even albums like, you know, I have a few of the Nine Inch Nails like definitive editions, and they have the booklets, but they got the pictures inside of like they it shows the modular synths, and it shows pictures of them like what they're using to record the computer and everything. And what's really cool about that is like, man, dude, they're using some old school digital equipment when it was kind of first coming out. And I love, you know, it's so cool to see that. So, they should definitely put out like, you know, and dude, we love that. Like the behind the scenes making of documentaries, classic albums, ultimate albums, like that stuff is just,
video I either saw the preview of on our beloved YouTube platform, and I don't know if I started watching it or I don't think I did, but apparently it was like King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard's like recording process. And it looked as if it was in a home, like a home style studio. And right. I'm really impressed with the quality of the stuff they get. I think it quality wise, it sounds just excellent. And, you know, to think of them doing a lot of this on their own, that speaks volumes of what is possible.
Yeah, I mean, I swear I saw a picture of Stu McKenzie or something, and he's like literally just on a Mac laptop, and it's like, wow, dude, that's, I mean, look, I mean, those give you enough horsepower to record albums and stuff now anyways, but it's like, man, dude, if you're doing KG and LW in this album, like on that, like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so, way to go, man.
You got the touch.
Yeah, you got the power. So, right. What tracks stand out to you, dude?
Yeah, well, I think I mentioned, I mean, first of all, the, what is it, Blue Morpho was definitely one. Shanghai is the one that really stood out to me. I liked it. The first couple of tracks on this album, I'd say the first four or five really, really, really got to me. Like those are the ones I'm like, oh, I dug. It's not to say I didn't like the other ones.
Yeah.
But I think initially that's when I sat down and really, really focused. My first initial impression. Yeah, absolutely. How about yourself, my friend?
Well, I talked about the ones sort of in the beginning of the album too, but I like how the beat kind of breaks up a little more in, I believe, Catching Smoke.
Okay.
And I like that. It was a nice change up for the beat. I love the title 2.02 Killer Year.
I mean, it's a great year.
I don't know what that is. That
either do I.
The year 2002?
I was just being agreeable.
I mean, that was a fine year. I don't look back on it with any like sort of bad memories or anything.
No. Not at all.
But
it was killer.
Yeah. From what I remember.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, I mean, 10 tracks, no singles, 5 or 6 listens. I like that it's different than anything we've heard from them recently.
Or ever. Not,
yeah. Yeah. The cover's really trippy too. I like that.
Yeah, what do they lost in that. What do they call that? They had a name for that style of artwork. I think it was like a cross-eyed something pictogram or something.
Something in that realm, my friend.
I think the artwork's neat
that
too.
I didn't like, write that down.
It's not. It wouldn't be like. Oh yeah, cross-eyed auto stereogram. That's what it's called.
Yeah, it's funny because it feels a little different than their, what I guess I would say, their, I don't know if I say standard artwork, but I look at, you know, Flying Microtonal Banana, the cover of that, and KG and LW. You know, I would talk about a brand, right? Nonagon Infinity, Polygon Duana.
Yeah, okay.
It's a little different than that.
This is totally off-brand.
Is it off-brand? Just like the Dude and Grimm Show. So... Well, I'm going to go ahead and just rate this 5 stars on my iTunes, because why not?
Yeah, I did notice, I looked briefly at the Pitchfork review, which, I mean, was fairly positive. It gave it a 7.5. I don't think that's a terrible rating. I really don't.
No. No, it could be worse. It could be better. But yeah, I think that's fine. I think that's fair. I'm not going to lambaste them for it.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, it says that they offered up this, what they're calling a 44-minute suite, which is just like a collection of musical ideas that transition from one in.
Sweet.
I think you're pretty terrific yourself. But, you know, of course, with the intent to be listened to as one continuous piece, which a lot of their albums are. But I think this one more than a lot of them, because there's sometimes, again, once you get to the point where you really know the album in and out, I'm sure you could know what it is. But in the early stages of just listening to it, I mean, it can just flow and you just kind of go with it and not even really sure all the time where you're at. And that's okay.
Yep. Feeling the flow of doing the bull dance. Well, Graham, my battery is running out of my camera, so I think that's a signal that we need to wrap this episode up.
All right. Well, this was our first initial impression. I would call it an overwhelmingly positive one.
Let us know what you think down below.
Like, subscribe, and comment below.
Right. Yeah.
It's time to go. The Dune Room Show.
Scratch a Track is produced by the Dude Grimm. Additional music provided by Moore and the Timms. Copyright 2021. The Dude Grimm Show.